Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the World Trade Organization. This year, the WTO opened its doors to the public against a background of newspapers headlines heralding a potential Great Depression number two. Policymakers in the U.S., who've had several giant financial institutions sound their alarm bells last week, as well as policymakers across the globe, are desperately seeking to avoid the series of missteps that accentuated the first Great Depression, the financial crisis of the 1930s. They're all stressing, rightly in my view, that lessons from the Great Depression have been learned, and that the many policy mistakes that were associated with it should be avoided. But one of the important lessons of the Great Depression, which we must not forget, is that protectionism and economic isolationism does not work. It did not work at the time, and how could it work in today's world, which is vastly more integrated? These policies are policies of the past, which should have no place in our future. Now, as tempting as it is in moments of crisis to give our producers comfort that we are shielding them from competition by shutting our borders to imported goods or services, this course of action must not be pursued. In fact, this infamous Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act of the 1930s that raised the U.S. tariff on over 20,000 imported goods to record levels led to nothing but a trade war between nations. And in so doing, it resulted in impoverishing us all, proving that protectionism and beggar thy neighbor policies are a dead-end road. In a financial crisis and at a time of economic distress, in particular at a time of soaring world food prices, what impoverished consumers desperately need is to see their purchasing power enhanced and not reduced. What is needed in times of crisis is to enable consumers to purchase more for less, and the temptation to shut our borders does exactly the opposite. And there is no doubt, therefore, that the current hurricane that has hit financial markets must not dissuade the international community from pursuing greater economic integration and openness. But in order to be both sustainable and fair, this integration has to be based on rules, and the rule book needs to be updated regularly. Now, this is why this year's public forum is entitled Trading into the Future, and in that lies a question: what kind of an international trading regime do we bequeath for future generations? Do we want a strengthened multilateral trading system based on the rules and the regulations, as well as an effective dispute settlement mechanism between members? Or do we want, for example, a spiral of free trade agreements? Those who favor free trade agreements often point to the inefficiency of the multilateral process. They argue that a multilateral trading system that rounds a round of negotiation, in this case the Doha development agenda for 7 years without closure is a failed system. But to them, I say, and how long does it take you to negotiate an FTA? And often, the answer is the very same number of years, but with an outcome limited to only two or very few players and to a narrow set of topics. Surely, therefore, more credit needs to be given to international attempts aimed at updating the WTO's rulebook, an attempt whose coverage will span all of its 153 members. And to skeptics of the multilateral process, I would also say, and where is the FTA that has delivered subsidy reductions? Isn't the reduction of subsidies that distort trade vital to truly leveling the playing field in international trade relations? Now, while FTA may have their forte in the reduction of tariffs, subsidy reduction is surely not their area of strength. And thus, I do not, quite frankly, see many alternatives to going multilateral, which is the WTO, what the WTO is about, as imperfect as our system may be today. And if anyone is in doubt as to the importance of subsidy reductions for the world's poor, I would point them to the many subsidy disputes that have been brought into the WTO, such as the cotton case with the US or the sugar dispute with the EU. It is such subsidies that have now led the developing world to place agricultural negotiations at the forefront of the Doha development agenda. And in doing so, the developing world has asked developed nations to walk their trade opening talk, if I may say so. And this is the importance of the WTO as a platform for negotiations, a platform in which members with only a few million or even less can bring disputes against entire continents and win them. But if the multilateral trading system is this useful to us all, how then do we take it into the future? And my answer to that is that we can only make a success of the WTO's future if we are able to make a success of its present. The DDA must be completed to the satisfaction of all its participants if a strengthened WTO is to move forward. In other words, first things first, to put it plainly. What the world has before it today in the Doha round of trade negotiations is a package that includes the reduction of unfair agricultural subsidies, the reduction of tariff walls on industrial and agricultural goods, the reduction of barriers to trade in critical services such as banking, energy, environmental services, and beyond that, myriad of new rules in areas such as trade facilitation, anti-dumping, or fisheries subsidies, just to name a few. This in order to bring the trading system up to speed with new market realities. But beyond that lies a more fundamental political objective. The Doha round is about renewing the affectio societatis, the vows of the original WTO contract, its two fundamental principles being, one, that contributions to more open trade be made on the basis of the members' level of development, and two, that members be bound by a set of the international obligations. And this will sound pretty similar to an issue like climate change, which we will be discussing in a few minutes. Now, despite the setback that Doha negotiations suffered last July, talks have once again been restarted with the aim of completing a deal on the parameters for tariff and subsidy reductions by the end of this year, what in our jargon we call modalities. And there's no doubt that this important milestone must be crossed before considering either an enlargement of the WTO's agenda or a changing of its decision-making practices. On this point, three principal constraints today represent a challenge to our work. The first is the bottom-up approach under which members must themselves always take the lead in tabling negotiating proposals and compromise solutions. The second is the principle of the single undertaking, which implies that in a round of negotiations with 20 different topics, nothing is agreed until everything is agreed. And the third is the decision-making by consensus, which is reasonably close to unanimity. Now, these three factors combined have no doubt slowed the negotiating process, but they are also essential for the legitimacy and the balance of any negotiating outcome. And I'm firmly of the views that with these factors, the Doha round must simply make do. And I personally do not believe that it is the time to launch a parallel negotiation on how to negotiate. That may be an idea, but it's an idea for later. The Doha round represents an important opportunity for civil society to make its voice heard. Several of the topics on the negotiating agenda are topics that civil society has fought long and hard for, such as the lowering of rich world agricultural subsidies, the lowering of environmentally harmful fisheries subsidies, trade opening in environmental goods and services, and ensuring good compatibility between WTO rules and multilateral environmental agreements. With these topics firmly on the agenda, civil society must continue to engage the WTO, and I would argue that your work, ladies and gentlemen, is cut out for you. You must help us bring each and every one of these topics to closure. Some of these topics, if successfully addressed, can already go a long way towards addressing problems such as the food price crisis or climate change, the reduction of agricultural tariffs and subsidies would allow agricultural production to shift more towards the developing world, where most of the potential lies, enabling supply to better adjust to demand and easing the structural causes of the food crisis. Similarly, and we'll come back to that, trade opening in environmental goods and services, and in particular in climate-friendly technology, can make vital pollution prevention and reduction equipment more accessible to countries in need, thereby easing this climate crisis. At our public forum last year, I cited to you some of the success stories that civil society has had in influencing the WTO agenda. most notably in the area of trips and access to medicines. Just yesterday, we saw the first shipment of AIDS generics from Canada to Rwanda under the provisions resulting from the Doha mandate. And today, I call on civil society to continue bringing its ideas and solutions forward, and it's only with your active participation that the WTO can come to reflect the type of arrangements and institutions you seek for the future. This forum, organized through the usual bottom-up approach, is your forum. You have set the agenda. You have organized the many sessions that will take place over the course of today and tomorrow. All we've given you is the venue, but the most important thing we give you in these few days is our attention for WTO members, for the Secretariat staff. This is listening, and as we all know, listening time is learning time. So let me conclude this introduction by thanking you for making this year's forum possible. Thank you. What I will do now is to invite the speakers to our first session this morning, the theme of which is mutual supportiveness of trade, climate change and development objectives and policies. So they will now join the podium. Mary Pangetsu, the Minister of Trade of Indonesia. And I want to thank you, Mary, for having come here for this event. We all know you've got a few things to do at home, so thanks for being here. Thomas Becker, who is the Deputy PS and the Climate Change Negotiator for Denmark. And you know that Copenhagen is in Denmark, and that there are a few preparations for this Copenhagen conference in 2009. Adrian Macy, who is the Climate Change Ambassador from New Zealand. And we have selected as a moderator Fiona Harvey, who is the Environment Specialist of the Financial Times. And I'll now pass the baton to her in order to moderate this first session. Fiona, the floor is yours.